You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, rolling full steam, blasting, kicking, laying down those that sweet, sweet discussion that you're dying to hear about John's thought about the third Dead Kennedys record and where they could have went with it, where they went wrong, where they went right, or the hard hitting commentary about, you know, the Rolling Stones, their Satanic Majesty's Request, Sgt. Pepper's ripoff, or daring proto goth record that no one truly appreciated at the time. Those are all the hard hitting and fresh news items you will hear on tonight's episode of the Punk News Podcast. Sammy B, what fresh news items are you looking forward to discussing on tonight's show?
I'm not sure. I'm very unprepared, so you may get a complete wild card out of me today.
And more, what news item are you looking forward to discussing on tonight's Punk News Podcast?
The return of the Moss Man. I'm
is
speaking it into existence.
I mean, is that just X-Files or oh no, that's like a whole thing, isn't it? Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, Mothman's real.
Here's how we can tie Mothman to neo-Nazism.
What? Excuse me?
So the third Tal Cross record, which thanked Gerard Menowin in the liner notes, and sadly, Rob Miller of Amoebics and Tal Cross wouldn't say that he disagreed with Gerard Menowin's Holocaust denial, even though the fact that Gerard Menowin is Jewish, which is one of the most bizarre things ever. Even though Rob wouldn't say he agrees or disagrees with that, which totally sank and destroyed the third Tal Cross record and washed away into nothingness, the meat of the album is about Mothman. Does he exist? And I'm not even kidding you. There's
oh
a song
God.
Called Black Cadillac, which I was hoping it wasn't a Rancid cover and wasn't, because the last thing that I want to hear is Amoebics covering Rancid, which would just, it wouldn't ruin Amoebics for me, but it would really make me, it would make me think less of Amoebics than Robert's association with Gerard Menowin. At any rate, that song is about the Mothman. And so it's a real shame, and it will always be a shame, that what could have been a really tripped out, whacked out record about sci-fi conspiracies got bogged down by an association with a Holocaust denier. So hey, Merry Christmas. It's December. It's December 21. Christmas is right around the corner.
Solstice Day.
Today's the solstice.
I can't.
Wotan's Day. So let's all say nice things about Wotan. Sam, what's your favorite thing about Wotan / Odin, the king of the mountain in Nordic mythology?
I don't think I have a favorite thing because I don't really care about Nordic mythology.
You don't care about Odin, Sam. That's culturally insensitive.
Yeah,
M,
I'm sorry.
What's your favorite thing about Odin, the old man in the mountain in Nordic mythology? Today is his day, of course.
Ah, yes. 100% the eye thing.
And of course, M is referring to the fact that Odin ripped out his left eye in order to gain infinite wisdom and foresee the destruction of the universe by the frost giants outside the gates of Valhalla. But not only is today Odin's day, and this is one of the weirdest Punk News Podcast episodes we've done in a while, and that's saying something. Not only is today Odin's day, but it's also Thor's day. Thursday. Wow, it's double whammy.
What is happening?
Sam, what's your favorite thing about Thor? You have to have something about Thor that you like.
Well, so I liked Thor when he was quote-unquote on the mats, because Thor was the nickname of Syndergaard, who is a pitcher, not on the Mets anymore. But other than that, Thor is a person in Marvel Universe, I guess, as well.
Of course, there's also another famous Thor, Thor Heyerdahl, the very famous explorer. Sam, what's your opinion of naming a child Thor? Would you ever name a child Thor?
No, because in mythology, he's stupid. He just makes mistakes.
Is Thor, would you name a kid Odin? I know someone that has a kid named Odin.
I personally would not. I think that the kid might create its own mythology and like all sorts of stuff. I don't think so.
How about Wotan, the Germanic version of Odin? Would you ever name a kid Wotan?
I don't think so. I think it'd go right to the kid's head.
Well, anyways, let's talk about some punk things, because this is a really trippy episode. So listen, before we get started, I want to talk about three cool things, and this has nothing to do with anything. Oh, it's the freestyle out of the Punk News podcast right now, which means we're going to talk about some news, but we also talk about random bullshit. And I got to say, I think I've been a little too indulgent lately, talking about Nordic mythology and Thor, but hey, listen, man, what are you going to do? But let's talk about three punk things. And Em and Sam, if you want to add anything to this discussion, please do. So, you know, I mean, I love CDs. Everyone hates CDs, but I love them. Although I will add the young people love CDs, the young people being 16, 17, and 18. They all love CDs again, so CDs are coming back around again, but I think it's kind of a fad. At any rate, I love CDs. And I was listening to three totally kick-ass CDs today and this week. One is the band Suck, who put out a record last year that kind of came and went without much notice. I talked about Suck a lot when they're from Germany, the land of Wotan. I talked a lot about them when they put out the record, but like no one seemed to really care. They have a record called Ribbit, and I've listened to a bunch this week, and man, I mean, that record really just rips. It's like everything I want out of punk. It's so, so good. It's like fast, furious, aggressive, kind of funny, kind of sadomasochistic, but also it's got like a – they also play a synthesizer. I think the singer – no, her name's not Greta. Her name is something like Greta, but it's not. At any rate, the singer, she plays like an electric keyboard or something, which gives the band a real unique sound. So the Suck CD, really – Ribbit is really awesome. The second thing is Steve Ignorant has put out about 6 or 7 live albums, and they're all really good. Some are very good and some are amazing. Some are just soundboard recordings and some are professionally recorded. The most recent one, Steve Ignorant Band, Crass Songs Live in Bristol 2023. I actually just played the CD for the first time today. It is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. The sound is it's professionally recorded. It's awesome. It's probably the best version of these songs that they've done live. You know, I never got to see Crass, and there are some Crass live albums, and they're really, really good. The sound quality is good, not great, but this is like the Crass songs done by Steve. Super fast, super aggressive from Steve's perspective, which I dig. And I think everyone should check out Steve Ignorant Band, Crass Songs Live in Bristol 2023. Fun fact, I didn't even – so, you know, Steve has been putting out very limited edition records – vinyl record versions of these CDs. I've just been buying every one because I'm a huge Steve Ignorant fan. Guess how much the Live in 2021 vinyl sells for? This is going to blow your mind.
$500.
Close. $450. Isn't that insane? Like yeah. I wish I'd bought two of them. I just bought one saying, I'll just, I want this record. Yeah, I'm astounded at that. I mean, not nothing against Steve. Steve's the man, but there's a lot of Steve Ignorant. There's a lot of Steve Ignorant Band live records, and I don't know why that one is Crass Songs Live in Nottingham 2001, $500 for the vinyl version. I mean, I just bought one because shipping was like $25 because it comes from England. Sam, why didn't I buy 10 of these? I mean,
one, John, we don't want to label you a flipper, so please don't buy 10 of them. Like, how many were pressed of this thing?
Only 300. But I mean, and Steve's a man, and Steve's a legend. But it's not. Steve is not like Drain or Tsunami, where it's like hot right now. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it's not a buzz band. You know what I mean?
Well, it's also plausible that one person like bought it for like $350 or $450 or whatever, right? So that's what is stuck on the internet market as, I guess, the going rate for it. But really, the worth might be less than that, you know? Pretty much, I have a set of NSYNC records that, like, goes for, like, $300, apparently. But it might just be that data shows that one person valued it to $300 because they wanted it so badly that they wanted to get their hands on it at any cost.
True. You know?
So I don't know. If it sells for $300 multiple times, then that is definitely the going rate for it.
True, true.
Yeah, I think we just have to let that ride out. Because sometimes when you buy multiple copies of things, sometimes you sit on it for a really long time.
True. One of the things that I, well, two other things that I'll add quickly is it's messed up for two reasons that this record is selling 430. Steve got $25 for it. The guy that actually made it got
Yeah.
$25, and someone else got 430. And also, it's crass, and people are capitalizing on capitalism, which is kind of amusing. And anyway,
Well, is
last thing.
but isn't that the thing? Like, people get mad for pressing records and it resells for a lot more than what they paid for it.
Honestly, I mean, that goes to my point that whenever people get mad about bands reissuing or repressing thing or like t-shirts, it's like, and this is not against Ian or Minor Threat or Fugazi because I like all those guys a lot. They don't do t-shirts. Ian says, I don't do t-shirts because I don't care about t-shirts. But then there's so many bootleg Minor Threat and Fugazi t-shirts, and the vast majority of those are printed on sweatshop shirts or whatever. It's like, I almost feel that like Ian sort of has a moral duty. Or if not moral, then a fan duty, if you will, to make legitimate ones at a reasonable price, because I mean they're going to exist one way or another, you know. So why not make them and either get the
Yeah.
money and keep it because he deserves it, or if he feels icky about getting money from t-shirts, then just donate it to stuff that he likes to donate it to. You know what I mean? Like I really like our bootleggers, and let me tell you, as part of my day job, I've smashed a lot of bootleggers, a lot, over 100. Out of the 100 bootleggers that I've smashed, Sam and M, how many do you think are just some kid that just likes a band and wants people to know about his favorite band? How many out of 100?
Three.
Zero. Zero. Every single time, it's been
Ooh.
some middle-aged dirt bag that feels he's in. Like, you would be amazed at how hard some of these guys kick back. It's like, I caught you red-handed. Like, you can't just press my band's shirts, especially since they're an active band selling their own t-shirts. You wouldn't believe how hard they kick back. Anyway, I can't stand bootleggers. So I think Steve should press tons of these records and make lots of money. And if he and if he wants to keep it, I think he deserves it. And if he wants to donate, that's fine too. And one last thing is I was also listening to Classics of Love. Oh man, I forgot the name of the album. Crap. Sam, what's the name of the Classics of Love album? Not Walking in Shadows. That's the EP. Oh, it's just called Classics of Love. Anyways, I was listening to the Classics of Love album on CD, the Japanese version with two bonus tracks. And man, well, that record is almost 12 years old now. It's crazy. At any rate, that record is so insanely good. I mean, it's without question one of the best things, if not the best thing, Jesse Michaels has ever done musically. It is just awesome, and everybody should own it. It just, like, listen, I love Op Ivy. Everybody loves Op Ivy. But Classics of Love is just, it's Jesse Michaels doing hardcore, and it's just so insanely good. So, I don't know. I mean, it's been out a while, but go check it out. It's a great record. Are you guys there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. That's
Woo,
all I got to
classics of
say.
love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go listen, folks.
Anyways, so I don't know. Sam or Em, anything you want to throw in the pile, or should we start talking about news? Damn it! I could have just bought a Classic of Love test press like a couple weeks ago and I missed out on it. Damn it!
Oh,
I would have bought that in 5 seconds. Damn it! What a dick.
Well, I did recently see Madonna, and
Hey.
apparently her set design was insane. Just saying. Too many platforms, too many places to look at. She utilized entire arena. Very, very happy with my really, really expensive ticket purchase. Go see Madonna, you guys. I know you might not give
Nice.
two craps, but yeah.
I like Madonna. I mean, I like Madonna's
Yeah.
first record a lot, to tell you the truth. And I like her early 12-inch singles too. And I like her punk band, Sam B. What was the song released by Madonna's punk band before she was Madonna?
I don't know.
Shit
Ooh.
on the Floor by Madonna.
Nice.
That checks out. Yeah, sure.
So Sam, how was Madonna? I mean, I know you said you liked it, but was it like what was particularly cool about it?
Well, again, the set design was crazy. Like, there was multiple platforms where, and like, catwalks, I guess, that would bring you to platforms. So, like, it's not like you're just sitting there and staring at a stage, because essentially the stage was all over the floor, which was really, really cool. There was also a floating platform where you might
Ooh.
see her in the air floating around, doing weird dances. So there was that. Also, she played a medley of things, and apparently there was a lot of like fan input that went into the specific tour, which I really did appreciate, because it's not like she was just there playing all of the hits. She did do a weird homage to like New York City punk, so like like CBGB
Really?
stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, kind of weird. Don't know how to feel about
Did she
it yet.
sing
Okay.
songs?
What?
Is she
No.
like singing? Oh no.
No, it was she like so in New York she sang I Love New York, which is off of her Confessions on the Dance Floor album, which was kind of like fun because apparently she debuted that song on this tour the night that I went, which was the first night in Brooklyn, which kind of is fitting because she's back in New York, but yeah, no, during that song there was like pictures of like CBGBs and pictures of like old downtown Manhattan where like she used to like hang out and stuff like that. Some of the dancers had like I guess faux hawks and like was dressed like a punk. So that's kind of like where I'm like I'm not sure how to feel about that, because is that like cultural appropriation to real punks? But I don't know the dancers, but
Sam, you bring up a really interesting point in that cultural appropriation is usually linked to ethnic backgrounds, but can you appropriate a non-ethnic culture? You know what I mean? That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Like, and that's where like I'm torn about it, is because I'm like, okay, so I'm ethnic, but it's not like they were like dressed up in like Asian attire, but I'm also, I feel like I'm a punk. I guess I'm a punk. I label myself as a punk, but I don't have a mohawk or never had a mohawk. But I do dress in a lot of black, that you may call me goth sometimes, especially now with my purple hair. But I was just like, so these p dancers were dressed a certain way specifically for the show, and I kind of feel like it had something to do with just the time frame of Madonna like coming up, because it was a celebration. Her tour's called Celebration, I believe, and she was like literally celebrating her life. So there was like a lot of like reflection about like being alive and coming up from nothing in like the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. To like where she is now, like a damn diva, right? So there was a lot of that happening, and I think like she was trying to pay homage to like where she came from, because I do know that like she lived in New York in a really shitty apartment back in the day. Bad things happened to her like here at first, and because yes, I do know too much about Madonna, I'm just saying. Hung out with like a lot of the artsy kids, like she was really good friends with Keith Haring and Basquiat and all of those people. So yeah, S ask me in a week, maybe I'll have an answer for you. I'm not sure how I feel about them using people that looks like punks in their
Well, speaking
core.
Karen, well, speaking of people that look like punks, Rome is going to be leaving Sublime, or Rome is leaving Sublime with Rome. Basically, well, the statement they released was, "Dear fans, friends, and supporters, after almost two remarkable decades, I'm announcing my." It's crazy that he's been in Sublime. Well, he's not in Sublime. He's in Sublime with Rome, which one of my favorite quotes is, "Sublime with Rome only has one original member of Sublime, but it has two original members of Sublime with Rome." And so, when did Sublime with Rome start? I would have guessed it had been like 6 years. I can't believe it's been that long. Let's see. Sublime with Rome has been a band since 2009. That's
Jeez.
15 years,
oh
which
God.
Is longer than the original Sublime, which is astounding. So anyways, Sublime, and the funny thing about Sublime with Rome is they've released one more album than Sublime did. Here's what I realize. I'm jumping all over, but listen, I was drinking iced tea, so what can you do? After almost two remarkable decades, I'm announcing my departure from Sublime with Rome. Well, how can he leave Sublime? If Rome leaves Sublime with Rome, is it still can it be Sublime with Rome with one original member that's not Rome? How can he leave Sublime with Rome? It's like, how can Greg Ginn leave Black Flag? You know, that's fun. That's weird. Or it's like, how can like Frankie? Well, let me think of another example. How can Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers leave Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers? You know. Anyways, after almost two remarkable decades, I am announcing my departure from Sublime with Rome at the close of 2024. The upcoming performance over the next year will allow us to reflect on the countless incredible memories together. Over the past 2 years, I've been spending countless hours pouring my soul into my solo music, and the excitement to share these songs with you is building up. I've got some really big news that I can't drop yet. Just wait. Singing and playing guitar with this iconic band has been a lifetime opportunity and just flat out absolutely epic. Carrying on Sublime legacy has been a trust I'll forever cherish. This is only the beginning. And of course, quite notably, that this departure of Rome comes just a week after, well, Sublime with Rome only has Eric Wilson of Sublime in the band, a different drummer. It might even be Joey Kiss. Let's see who the drummer of Sublime with Rome is. The drummer of Sublime with Rome, it used to be Bud Gow, but he left a while ago. Right now, it's Joe Tomino. So Sublime with Rome is Rome, Eric Wilson of Sublime, and Joe Tomino. But then last week, Eric Wilson, Bud Gow were at the HR Benefit concert where they did a Sublime set with Jacob Noel, son of Bradley Noel, on vocals. So, you know, the timing of this is very interesting. And in fact, there was even a report, I believe it was in Entertainment Weekly, that talked about how Sublime will be resurrected with Jacob. I'm going to be right back, but Sam and Em, why don't you two talk about that, and I'll be back in a second.
Sure. What is happening? Like, seriously? Okay. Is Sublime with Rome, leaving, is it just, yes, like, Blime now? Like it's only like one member. Like, I'm not even sure like what is going on. Like, I just feel like they need to stop at this point. There's tons of cover bands that does like Sublime tributes that does it better than Sublime with Rome. That is probably more like Sublime normally. So I'm just putting it out there. Apparently, the son of the singer from Sublime, is out there doing things, and he sounds just like his dad. So,
yeah,
maybe go and see him. I don't even know what his name is right now. But there is video footage of him doing Sublime songs. I don't know. While I look this up, Em, what do you think? It's crazy.
Well, like, this is my thing. Was Sublime with Rome just a thing until, I think his name's Jacob, until he, like, grew up, you know? And be like, oh, he's interested in music and he likes to sing and he will probably want to have some part in carrying on his father's legacy. And oh my gosh, he sounds exactly like him. This is perfect. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I kind of think it might have been something like that where this was in the works for a while. But again, like, I don't know.
Like, the thing was, like, so Bradley Noel, right?
Yes.
He's the guy that's the front of Sublime, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
He died when Jacob was young.
Right.
So
Like
Jacob,
two. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, the fact that like I'm not even sure if that was like Jacob's entire thing, like, oh, I'm gonna follow my dad's footsteps.
Right.
I think it just naturally was a progression, you know, because
For sure.
I did remember listening to some of Jacob's stuff, and it wasn't like super rock, like it wasn't like Sublime, you know, his normal stuff.
Yeah.
So it's also a possible coincidence that this just happened. But I would have to say, I'm like, yo, if Jacob wants to go and do like an entire set of Sublime stuff and find a backing band, I'm sure it's going to be 10 times better than Sublime with Rome. And they could play every beach on in like California, and it'll be totally fine.
That'd be a sick tour. Oh my
Exactly.
God.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like show up on a pier.
Yeah. Grab some ice
Well,
cream, a hot dog.
I mean, there's a couple things that you could pull apart from this is like Sublime with Rome is forever like kind of tainted. It's like it's not Sublime. There's one Sublime guy there. Why are you calling it Sublime with Rome? But on the other hand, is they do headline festivals and they do play a lot of the festivals. I mean, you know, they bring in pretty good money, you know. Although, you know, maybe I don't know if the guarantee is going down or not. I've never seen Sublime with Rome. I don't know if the crowd is like, yeah, it's Sublime, and they don't even really care that it's not really Sublime at all. Or everyone's like, yeah, you know, like with the Long Beach Dub All Stars, you know, it's like, oh, cool, man. It's the Long Beach Dub All Stars. It's not Sublime, but it's the closest we're going to get. Hooray. You know what I mean? Whereas normally, you know, like Jacob Dylan, you know, it's like, oh, all right, Jacob Dylan, you want to be like your dad, you know, or Julian Lennon. It's like, all right, Julian Lennon, you kind of look like your dad, so we're going to give you a record deal. You know, for some reason, this kind of steps around that for me. Maybe it's because Brad died so early. Or maybe it's like, well, you know, this kid never really had a dad, so let's cut him a break. Or maybe it's because that, I mean, I think a huge part of this was he put out that song Time Traveler written with Tim Armstrong, which I went into it thinking I was going to hate it. And I actually really, really like that song. And, you know, Brad Noel's dead. So if someone's going to sing Sublime songs, why not his son that looks exactly like him and sounds almost exactly like him? You know what I mean? It's like. So I would much rather see Sublime with Jacob Noel than with Rome, but a part of that is because Rome got tagged as being kind of a prima donna and a dick. And every time I see Rome, I'm like, yeah, that guy's a dick, man. But I don't know that he's a dick. Like the only reason I think he's a dick is because everyone says that he's a dick. But maybe he's not a dick. But everyone says that he's a dick. So where am I going with this? Here's where I'm going with this is. I don't think it was strictly a financial decision by Sublime because Sublime with Rome plays relatively big shows. Though I do think they realized how talented of a singer. Well, actually, but actually, look, you have to look at it this way too. Eric Wilson is the reality is that Eric Wilson is probably the only owner of Sublime with Rome. Maybe Sublime get, I mean, maybe Rome gets a portion, but he's not getting one third, you know, or one half for sure. So why would he reform Sublime with Bud Gow and Jacob when he's giving up a bigger part, you know, part of the pie? You know what I mean? I don't know if they're cutting Jacob in at one third, but if Bud Gow is in the band, he's probably getting at least one third. So that's a cut to Eric Wilson's share. But then again, maybe they play together and maybe they realize how good it sounded. And also, I mean, you know, maybe Coachella reached out to him or Riot Fest is like, yo, we'll give you a huge chunk of cash if you call yourself just Sublime and do just old Sublime songs. And maybe that got them scratching their chins, like, yeah, we'll do the festival circuit, you know, with as Sublime for a year or two and get mucho big bucks instead of pretty big bucks with Sublime with Rome. Or maybe they're just tired, maybe Sublime with Rome, maybe they're just tired of each other. On one hand, I feel sorry for Rome because it's clear he's getting the boot in favor of Jacob, but on the other hand, Jacob, if there is a rightful heir to the crown, I think it's got to be Jacob. Do you guys disagree?
Oh no, I completely agree. Like, if it only makes sense that you would like take Jacob in under your wing if that's what Jacob wants, you know. They definitely don't force him into it, but you know, if
Yeah.
that's what he wants, then go for it. Yeah, it kind of sucks that they booted Rome, but I don't think I don't know a single soul that cared about Rome per se. So I'm just being frank. Like, I'm not even sure. Hey, if you love Rome, please email us at Punk News and tell me off. Thank you. Yeah, like I really don't know, like if anyone really cared. I personally think that whoever did see Sublime with Rome went to go see Sublime songs because they love Sublime songs and just dealt with the Rome, if that makes any sense.
Sam,
Because you know, Sublime songs, they are classic to some. They are legacy, and you know, sometimes once a band is gone or the singer is gone, it's hard to live up to that.
well said, Sam. I will add on somewhere there probably is one person going, I can't believe Supply, I mean, Rome's leaving Supply with Rome. Oh, yeah, it's my favorite band. But also, what makes this kind of really fit together so well, and the reason it's not causing it, like people are like, well, who's this guy Rome? You know, like why is Rome, why, like the reason it's Sublime with Rome is because the Nowell Estate didn't want the band to just be called Sublime, which I understand from a
Yeah,
financial standpoint and
for
a creative
sure.
standpoint. I mean, listen, let's be real. If there was no Brad, if there was Brad, if there was no Brad Nowell, would anyone know the name Eric Wilson and Bud Gow at all? You know. Second thing is I think what makes this an easy pill to swallow is you got Jacob Nowell. He's pretty good at the Sublime thing. Like he like it's like it's like damn, that's a, I think what he does have that Rome didn't have is when you listen to Rome, he's got kind of the American Idol thing going on. Like he's perfect in every he's perfect in like pitch and stuff, but there's no heart to it. It's all mechanisms. Whereas even though it might be just vocal tricks like Bob Marley does, when Jacob sings, he's almost like Brad, that it's imperfect, but you can feel the emotion behind it. And I think that's the main difference. Anyways, I don't know why I'm so rah-rah Jacob. I think it's just because I think it's because I really like that song Time Traveler. I'm like, yeah, Jacob, you know. So anyways, we'll see. I mean, I'll definitely go see Sublime with Jacob.
Wait, are you already like dubbing this band a new name?
I would bet a lot of money it's going to be called Just Sublime. It's not going to be called Just Sublime. It's going to be called Sublime. Sublime with no one special. No, it's just going to be called Sublime because at least for the first three or four or five festival appearances, that name with no modifiers is worth a lot more money than a name with a modifier. That's just how the business works. It really is, you know.
Oh boy. Sublime
Well,
brackets Jacob.
Sublime with Sammy B. What do you think, Sam? What do you think?
Oh, no one wants to hear me sing. Not even
I do.
people at karaoke with me.
I'd go see Sublime with Sammy B. And would you go see Sublime with Sammy B?
Of course. Hell yeah.
I swear we're all gonna have to get everyone earplugs. Be ready for dying cat screams because that's what my husband dubs my vocal talents. Or death metal screams because I am maybe the human embodiment of Akrasuko. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Let's just say whenever I get in a karaoke room with my friends, it has been interesting. Even with the pop songs I sing.
Sam, what's Akrasuko? I don't know what that is.
Oh boy.
You need to watch it.
Yeah.
How do I spell it?
You know what, John? I'll just send it to you. It's on Netflix. It is,
Akrasuko?
yeah.
What's it about?
So essentially, it is a cartoon series on Netflix about a red panda that is actually a Sanrio character, aka the same company that makes Hello Kitty and Karoopy and Pachaco. anyways, so this red panda works in an office building doing a almost like accountant work or financial somethings. She crunches numbers all day. And gets really frustrated at the job, and at night runs to the karaoke bar to sing death metal. And that's how she gets out all of her screams. I will not go further into what happens in the later episodes of the series because I will be giving away everything, but it is damn right great and possibly me in anime form.
Okay, well, I will check it out if it's the same in anime form. But speaking of someone that I really think should have been the new singer of Sublime, Marissa Paternoster is back on the road. Well, not on the road, but she's doing shows again. Of course, Screaming Females suddenly broke up, shocking everyone in the music world. Everyone. We were all very shocked. I was shocked. And now Marissa is starting up shows again as Noun. On February 24 in 2024, she's playing Cambridge, Massachusetts as Noun. Noun is Marissa solo as opposed to the Marissa Paternoster band, which is Marissa Paternoster with Shauna Pauly of Snake Skin and Angie Boylin of what's the band where the drummer got kicked out of and everyone was mad about it? And I was really mad about it, even though I didn't really never listened to the band.
Later, Kenny.
Yes, later, Kenny. So listen, man, I'm still sad that Screaming Females broke up. I'm sad that they're not going to be at the Garden Party this year, but I'm super glad that Marissa and the other members are still doing music. I was going to say, I was thinking about driving up to this to see that. Not driving up, but there's literally 12 tickets left right now. So cool. I'll just see Noun in Philadelphia. Maybe I'll throw a show. At any rate, yeah. So,
you mean another punk news show?
Well, there's a punk news show on January 5, Froggy's last show for a long, long time. And I'm already thinking about Summer Soiree 7. I've got some crazy ideas. Noun certainly would be in the cards. I have to reach out to Marissa and whatnot. But yeah, so anyways, I'm glad she's still doing music and I'm psyched to see what she does next. I don't know if, Em, you have any perspective on this or input, but do you think, do you think Marissa will keep doing solo stuff? Do you think she'll do the Marissa Paternoster band? Or do you think she'll form a new band with other people of maybe of equal experience and stature and like call it, like, you know, call it a name, not the Marissa Paternoster, blah, blah, blah. What do you think?
I think she's going to do like solo stuff for a while. So I do think she's going to form another band, but I think it's going to take some time, like maybe a year or two. But I think she's really going to tour with solo stuff for the next little bit. That's my thought. But again, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of it ever happening. I think it's just going to take some time. What do you guys think?
I think all of the above, if there was like, you know, an option C or D, I would bubble that. Yeah, I think she'll probably do some solo stuff because she did put out a solo album like this year. Yeah, this year, I think.
I think mid last year was the Marissa Paternoster.
Yeah, so essentially there is solo stuff out there. I wouldn't be shocked if she just joins a tour of, you know, someone looking for a sick ass guitarist, just to, like, you know, roll around and see what happens. Also would not be shocked if she's been working on something on the side with other people, because that does happen all the time. It's not like Screaming Females was like, you know, touring nonstop, you know. She seems like she has like musical output that up the wazoo anyways, like always putting things out or working on things. So I wouldn't be shocked if there was like, you know, lingering songs or ideas of songs that, you know, have been put on the back burner that now, like, you know, she will just find other people to, like, you know, mess around with it with her. I don't know. I am very glad that, you know, she did like announce that, you know, things are happening. So it's not like, you know, this is a complete, like, we're never going to see her again. type of situation, because, you know, a lot of bands do call it quits and we don't see them for years. You know, you want to grow up or you want to do other things, because, you know, we're all grown-ups, I guess, eventually, right? Yeah, so option all of the above for me.
Do you think Marissa's next release will be Screaming Females-ish or kind of different? Because if you all recall, both Noun and the Marissa Paternoster Band are much more, I'd say, gothy than Screaming Females, which are more rocky. So the question is,
yes.
Does Marissa do that on purpose to kind of separate the two things? Or is, like, if we look at Vivian Girls, together they're the Vivian Girls, but separately, Cassie Ramone, you can tell, like, the Cassie Ramone element of Vivian Girls is Cassie Ramone, kind of like shoegaze, noisy, almost no wave sometimes. And the Katie Goodman element is kind of the AM girl group, Motown, pop kind of thing. And together that makes Vivian Girls. Whereas other bands, when they break, like Bauhaus, when they break up, you're like, where's Bauhaus in any solo project, you see? So the point being is, I'm going on a roundabout way, is Noun and Marissa Paternoster solo significantly different than Screaming Females because Marissa says, I want it to sound significantly different? Or is it just because Marissa went separated from the other two members, the amazing Jared and amazing Mike, that's what she sounds like by herself? That's the question.
Well, you know what? I think it could go either way.
Sam, I'm going to interrupt. Will she do Screaming Female stuff solo? Go ahead, Sam. I'm sorry.
I think that can happen. I think she could definitely do Screaming Female stuff solo. Because, again, like, you know, Screaming Females is mostly her vocals or all of her vocals. So I think that can happen. I've seen bands go solo and they will do their band stuff, like, you know, they will quote unquote, I guess, cover it or whatever, you know, their band stuff, like, you know, solo. So that can happen. I think it could definitely go either way, because, you know, when you're a solo act or if you're, you know, starting a new thing, you can either, and if you have, you're, if you're akin to two different sounds, so it's like the gothy or the rocky, you might mix that together and then make an album of that. Or you might do one gothy album and then the next album might be rocky. We've seen progressions of bands where every record that they put out, like, is a totally different sound. So I don't know. The future will tell us. If I ask future Sam in 2050, maybe future Sam can tell me. I'll be really old then. Jeez.
But you'd have seen so much, you know? Like, it'd be so cool.
I know. And the other thing is, like, is future Sam and future John still record slinging?
Of course. What are you dumb questions, Sam? let's see. And of course, Sam and John will be right. Sam, you're coming down March 2, right? Right? Right?
Yeah. We just yeah. Yes.
Listen, Sam, it's been a busy 3 months. Let me tell you. But listen, here's who else stuff is busy for. Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, the seminal debut album by the Dead Kennedys, just went gold this week. I think it was East Bay Ray did an announcement on Instagram saying, we went gold in USA, meaning they sold 500,000 copies of the record in USA. And some people reported on this, including Punk News, but Punk News was the only one to report on this and point out that, yes, while it has gone gold as per RIAA scans, it probably went gold some time ago because Alternative Tentacles, when they had the rights to the record, sold directly. They sold a lot of copies directly, which would not get scanned through RIAA, not to mention all the many distributors, including Mordheim Records. So really, the record probably went gold, I would say, 10 to 20 years ago. And further, I'm kind of surprised that it's only going gold now. Not that Dead Kennedys is as big as Green Day, but certainly they're way more important than Green Day when it comes to punk, arguably. I'm going to see how many copies of Dookie has sold while we talk about this. But Sam M, are you guys surprised that this went gold only? Like, I thought it went gold in, like, the 80s. You know what I mean? Not now.
Well, I think the point of the matter that you just brought up was, like, the fact that it's, yeah, they probably sold a whole bunch of copies that wasn't, like, recorded by, to the record industry of being sold. Like, I think I remembered watching, like, the Bad Religion, like, documentary or something like that, how they were, like, originally, like, selling 7 inches that they pressed, like, everywhere, or they were just like sending demos everywhere. And that all of that stuff that isn't being tracked. So tracking is I guess like the only means of like figuring out whether or not a gold record or not is your record is like going gold or not. So yeah, I do agree with you. It's probably been gold for a while. It's just, there was a whole bunch of copies out there that hasn't been accounted for. Yeah, I do think that it's pretty cool that it went gold. It's, hard to go gold these days with streaming.
Sure is.
And all of that. So, kudos to them for that. But yeah, I do believe that they probably got it a lot sooner. Actually, do you
Say
even need a gold, this like plaque to actually like say you've made it anywhere? Like, does people ever care about this?
yeah, well, I mean, people do, like, if you're trying to impress, if you're a record label and you're trying to impress certain new artists, that's useful. If you're an attorney or a marketer or something, or a producer, if you're a producer, it's a great thing to have those on your wall to get new business for sure.
But John, does a punk care about it?
The answer is most punks aren't nearly as punk as they think they are, owing to the fact that Green Day's Dookie has sold 10 million copies in USA alone. So most punks, as punk as they like to pretend they are really just mainstream wannabes that just aren't cool or young or hip enough to be in the mainstream. Unlike me, who was a true punk, TRU-PUNX.
Hence the punk points, huh?
Exactly.
Em, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying. I think it definitely went gold quite a while ago. And I think kind of no matter what, like it's an impressive thing because it's just like, oh my God, they made it. Like that's cool. They sold the stuff, but I don't think obviously that's what they set out to do. I don't think Dead Kennedys did with Fresh Fruit, and I don't think Green Day did with Dookie. I think both those were just kind more testaments to what they put out.
Well, I actually would disagree with M in one respect. With regards to Dead Kennedys, I agree that they didn't set out to go platinum or gold or anything. Because hilariously, the reason Alternative Tentacles exist in the first place is because the Dead Kennedys couldn't get anybody to put out their record, so they just put it out themselves, which ended up being one of the smartest things they ever did. I would say Dookie was definitely intended to sell millions and millions and millions of records because they were signed. Was it to Warner Brothers? Who put out Dookie? Let's see here.
It was a
Dookie
major.
was put,
Yeah, I
yeah.
think it was Warner. Yeah.
Was it? They were signed to Warner before that was even written or recorded, and they brought in no Reprise. It's actually Reprise Records, which I think
It's owned
is
by
now owned by
Warner. Yeah,
Warner.
it's owned.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you guys are right. And they brought in Rob Cavallo, who at the time was already a very famous producer. So I think Dookie was definitely intended to capitalize on the emerging punk boom and say, here's a punk record for the mainstream. And of course, from a strategy standpoint, it was a massive success. Bruh.
Ah, cool.
Well, Rob Cavallo has also produced. My Chemical Romance. Let's see what
Yeah.
else. One
Woo.
okay. I have no idea. Oh, I'm looking up the first thing that he produced. Oh, maybe Green Day was the first thing that he produced. No. Oh, he did Prince before that. So yeah, he definitely was famous by them. So. Okay, anyway, cool. So anyways, this is just a quick story, kind of sad but bittersweet. With regards to Tony Slug of BGK, he passed away from cancer, sadly. However, he did record one last album before he passed away, and there's a bunch of heavy hitters on the album with him, including Jello, Jennifer Finch of L7, Nick Anderson of Helicopters, Jerry A of Poison Idea, Happy Tom of Turbo Negro, and a bunch of others. So they're going to put out his final record on March 22. Of course, BGK is a seminal and very good early Dutch punk band. And this is cool. And so I'm going to check it on out. So, yeah. Emmer, Sam, I don't know if you have any feelings about BGK, but if you don't, you should check them out.
Yeah, I will check them out.
Okay. And I guess in one story, maybe we'll get to some others, or maybe we won't. One last story is Coxbar. They're going to release their eighth and final studio album. Oh, and I I'm going to jump back for a second. Sam wasn't on this episode. Sam... The Damned, recently, we talked about this like two episodes ago. The Damned said they are going on their final Australian tour.
Oh, yes.
Not their final tour, but their final Australian tour.
Oh, no, I was on that.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'm losing my mind then. All right, so anyways, then I won't talk about that. Anyway, let's talk about Cox Bar. They're releasing their final album. There's a couple shows coming up. Cox Bar. I guess since like... 2005 to 2010, they've sort of become the emblematic UK punk band that's still around, if you will. You know, the headline Punk Rock Bowling, they headline a bunch of other festivals, but like Punk Rock Bowling, when Cox Bar plays, everyone's like, oh my God, it's Cox Bar. Sammy B and I were actually at Punk Rock Bowling, Atlantic City, not Atlantic City, Asbury Park, where Cox Bar headlined, and people really were freaking out. I was like, eh, it's okay. I realized I'm supposed to love Cox Bar. I don't dislike Cox Bar. I think Shock Troops is a pretty good album. I interviewed the main Cox Bar guy once, and he's a nice guy. And I like that Cox Bar actually existed before punk, which is kind of cool, as a pub rock band. I think that's pretty cool. But everyone loves Cox Bar. I just think Cox Bar is okay and sometimes a little boring and not that daring musically. I don't know, man. If people like it, that's fine. I mean, I don't hate Cox Bar. I think there's worse things to like than Cox Bar. But my question is, why has Cox Bar become so huge? And like great example, Cox Bar has headlined over Flag in America. And I'm like, how is any band headlining over Flag in America? It's freaking Black Flag with Keith Morris, like something we thought we would never see ever. Like, how is anyone, and Cox Bar is? And I'm not hating on Cox Bar. I think they're okay. I don't think they're bad. I think they're kind of boring, and I think they're kind of derivative and repetitive. I'm coming across as very mean. I don't mean to be. I like some of the songs, but like, why is Cox Bar so huge? Or is it kind of like the Geezen thing where everyone's got a Cox Bar back patch, but no one actually listens to Cox Bar? Though I will say, Sammy B, when you and I were at Punk Rock Bowling, people were freaking out for Cox Bar and singing along like soccer hooligans.
Yeah.
England Belongs to Me, is that Cox Bar or is that someone else? Is that Cox Bar? Let me see.
Yeah.
Yes, it is Cox Bar.
It's a yes.
Here's a being told, you ain't as good as us. Join the line, sign your name. And they all said our country's going bust, but no one's fooling us again. England belongs to me. A nation's pride, the dirty water. Is this a song or my God? Anyway, Sam, Cox Bar, where do you stand?
Oh my God.
On the CS.
Okay. So we went to Punk Rock Bowling, had a damn blast. I think even picked up an entire giant PBR, man. I'm not sure. There is a picture floating around on my Instagram page of
that's right.
A lot of us picking up some really drunk PBR, man. Anyways, we had fun. I went to go see Cox Bars just because, to see them because they're there. Because, you know, I went to Punk Rock Bowling for other bands, really. yes, people were freaking out. It's also plausible that people were freaking out because they really do like Cox Bars, and, you know, maybe they have never seen them before because they're from the UK and may have not had a chance to see them in the States. One. Also, they're really, really old in age, that is. So, you know, also plausible that people showed up to go see them because they're really, really old. Possibly the other reason why I went to go see Madonna, because Madonna's really, really old. And, you know, at some point, people don't tour. Just like what we were trying to talk about the 2 weeks ago or last week about, you know, the final Australian tour thing. Yeah, I'm not terrible. I'm not a fan of Cox's Bar. I do understand their historical significance to punk. I do understand that a lot of the people I hang out with loves Cox Bars. I do understand that I see too many Cox Bars patches sometimes, depending on the show that I go to and how crusty it is. So I get it. But yeah, I do think that them proclaiming that this is the final album is you know, a really big, bold statement. So does this mean if this is the final album, they're really, really going to be done? You know? Maybe. I don't know. It looks like they only announced two dates and they're both in the UK. So if they're putting out an album, are they even planning on, like, you know, really touring and saying goodbye? I don't know. There's a lot of question marks here, including whether or not there is a song premiere for any of this, because I know that they released the album cover art, I guess, these two dates, but is this new album going to sound exactly like all the other ones, or is this going to be some weird concept album? Someone please tell me.
I hope it's a weird concept album. That would be funny.
Like, the final one is just noise from a computer and someone grunting.
We've changed our sound, guys.
Or no, we're going full Depeche Mode, UK.
Perfect. You guys are pretty funny, but what it actually is actually an album of all Sublime covers. Rome is going to be on a lot of the songs.
That's the big news coming that he couldn't talk about. Yes, we figured it out.
Well, Em, what's your stance on Cox Bar?
Cox Bar, one of those bands where it's like, ha, their name has cock. That's fun. you know, and it's like, I'll check them out. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm not the world's biggest Cox Bar fan. They do have some, like, decent songs. I understand their historical significance. I think that's great. If you like them, good for you. You'll be really excited about this album. But, yeah, they were interesting because they're definitely a you don't sound like your name band for me. Because, again, they were all over, like, Vive La Rock and, like, all sorts of stuff when I started getting into punk and looking into different, like, you know, magazines and everything. And I was like, oh, I'm going to love these guys. They look cool, you know, all this. And then I was like, ooh, okay, I am lukewarm, but I understand it. You know what I mean? I respect it, but it's not my cup of tea. So those are my thoughts on Cox Bar. I do think they'll probably have, like, a final big tour where, like, these are some, like, kind of shows in the UK to just kind of test the waters, and then I think they're probably going to do maybe a festival circuit or something. I think they're going to tour it, maybe not super extensively, but, like, in places they know that like, maybe that mean a lot to them, like if they do go back and play Punk Rock Bowling or something like that. So that's my Cox Bar stance.
Wait, so, like, what are you guys' stance about bands going, hey, we're doing something, but more details are going to be released soon? And then, because, like, that just gives me anxiety. like, I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, what does that mean?
I'm not actually opposed to that, because I do that with like shows. I'll be like, Punk News is going to announce something cool next Wednesday. You know, however, it's annoying when they're like, we've got big news. We can't wait to share with you. And then it's just like a show they're playing. It's like, we're playing a show. It's like, oh, whoa. You know, if a band does an announcement of an announcement, I want at least a big tour or an album or an EP to be announced. You know, anything like, yeah. Like yeah. Or not like a new t-shirt line, like we're putting, this would be cool. Mick Jagger's like, I'm going to announce something really huge, you know, in a month or something. I'm like, oh man, solo album, solo tour. And it was the Mick Jagger brand harmonica. It's like, wow, thanks, you know?
Well, so. when you do it, it's like, there's a date to it. So it's like, oh, yeah. Next week, everything will be announced, you know? It's like, this goes more detail soon. And it's like, if I was a fan of Coxbar and I saw more detail soon, I'd be like, what does this mean? Like, I would have to go to therapy just to be like, oh my God, my favorite band. What does this mean? Are they really breaking? Like, you know? Or maybe it's just me being like paranoid. I don't know. Or like being like, okay, now I have to check the website, punknews.org website, to for more Coxbar coverage every single day.
Poor Coxbar, we're taking a beating on tonight's episode, but it's my fault. I mean, I kicked it off. You know, like I said, I don't hate Coxbar. I interviewed the guy once for New Noise, and he's a real nice guy. We talked about the Small Faces, because on their first tour, they opened for the Small Faces, which is kind of a fun factoid. But the Punk News Podcast is not a fake show where we're like, hooray, rah, rah, rah. So, you know, blah, 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 you know. Anyways. So, I don't know, man. I wish them well. What can I say? If someone can write in and tell me why Coxbar is special, like, if it was you had to be that kind of thing, I'll accept that argument. But then tell me why the later day Coxbar albums are worth listening to. And maybe the answer is they're not, but that doesn't look like, you know, like, let's be real. The Damned's last 10 albums haven't been great, except for World Without Heroes, whatever that album is called. It's actually a pretty good album. But, like, you know, I still want to see the Damned because they're freaking awesome, you know. So, yeah, I don't know, man. But I feel like the Damned are way better than Coxbar. Like, way better, you know. I don't know. Anything – I feel bad. I beat up Coxbar so bad. They seem like nice guys. So go see Coxbar, people.
Yeah.
If they were at a festival and I was at a festival, I would go watch the set. Sammy B, are you going to go to Punk Rock Bowling this year?
I don't think so. I may not go to any festivals this year. Oh, well, I didn't go.
Why?
I didn't go to any festivals this 2023. That didn't happen this year. But 2024, I'm not even sure yet. Like, I've seen the festival lineups that's been rolling around. And, you know, there's, like, bands that's, like, you know, there that I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. But maybe, call me jaded, but I've seen so many bands. Like, there's literally, like, on my hands, I could count the bands that's, like, my white whales that I'm, like, I'm still waiting to see them, you know?
Who? Name some, Sam.
Oh, my God. So, Much the Same, they're from Michigan. They're very not, like, anything that, like, huge. I love them to damn pieces, and I've been advocating to, like, see them for eons. They actually got back together and put out an album, I think, like, 2-3 years ago, and it was a damn good album. I'm pretty sure I made my end of the year list, you guys. Yeah, no, I still have not seen them because they only play Michigan, so it's kind of like I need to, like, fly to Michigan or get out to Michigan to go see them or find them in Canada. So, yeah, that's kind of like a waiting game for me. I've seen Weezer before, but I really want to see Weezer just do Blue Album, and apparently that may be happening next year.
Ooh.
Yeah, I heard some murmurs or read some things on the internet that, you know, the Blue Album is turning an anniversary, and we're talking about doing shows. So maybe find me there, because I do know that they did album shows like a while back, like maybe 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, and I remember being on queue for tickets and did not get tickets to it, because it sold out before I got there. Thank you, Ticketmaster or Live Nation queues, for messing that up for me. I guess it was just fate. Yeah, so there's something like that. I would love to see that. Right now, I can't really think of anyone else that might be it. I'm gonna see Green Day this year.
Woo!
Yeah, that giant tour is coming around. They're playing Citi Field, which is the home of my husband and this family's baseball team. So we're definitely going to be there for that, because I love eating at Citi Field. If you guys can't tell by now, we really like baseball here in this family. Even the dog loves it. Not really. But yeah. Yeah. I think that's it for now. I'm sure more will come up in my brain one day. I don't know. Yeah. What is happening?
I don't know. It just popped up. John is the host now, and it's like he was the host when we started.
I think John disappeared. And now he's appeared.
Ooh, that makes sense. Can you guys hear me? Yes.
Yeah. Are you a ghost?
Ooh.
Maybe I am.
The ghost of Christmas future, past, or present?
I would say I'm the ghost of Christmas future. And the ghost of Christmas future, M, what are some of your bucket list bands that you'd like to see in 2024?
Oh my God, I have so many. I have so many.
Yes, M, do tell.
So many. So like, ooh, Vile Creature are massive, because I haven't been able to see them. Like, it's anytime they've been playing close-ish to me or whatever, and they don't play shows very often, I haven't been able to go see them. So I want to see them so bad this year. And then like Laura Jane Grace is putting out an album. It'd be really cool to see her live.
Actually, I'm going to interrupt you, Em. I didn't do a news article for this, but we got a news tip that Laura Jane Grace has just got married.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it's true. Is that news
from our perspective? Is that news?
I don't think so. It's a great life milestone for Laura Jane Grace and her spouse. I think that's awesome, but I don't think we need to do a news post about it. What do you guys think?
What do you think, Sam? To me, it's like right on the line. Oh, go ahead, Sam.
This seems like TMZ. Like, you know, didn't we have a conversation like a million years ago about, like, you know, No Facts or Fat Mike being covered on TMZ?
Oh, yeah.
and like us being like, is this news?
Was that like his latex allergy thing or something?
No, just being followed around by TMZ doing ridiculous things, you know.
When he married that woman Soma Snake Oil, they posted marriage pics.
Oh yeah, that.
TMZ.
Oh yes.
Or Entertainment Weekly. I forget which it was. You know, I mean, it isn't like if I'll just use Lemmy as an example. If Lemmy got arrested, would that be news?
Well. I think it would be news if it affected tour, if it happened during tour, or it's affecting the fact that they're not putting out any output for a while.
How about, well, here's a better example. Remember when the Cannibal Corpse guy, like, blew up his own house and then they arrested him like down the street or something. Like, yeah. Is that news? We covered it. It was a big news story. Is that news?
I think so. Just because, like, why? it would make, well, it would affect the band because maybe that was a practice space. And it would, well,
But someone getting married affects the amount of free time they have, so that arguably affects a band.
I don't think so. Will affect the free time. Well, like,
how about when someone has an album, like, you know, Marvin Gaye has that album, Hear My Dear, which is all about him getting divorced. Would Marvin Gaye getting remarried be news if he put out an album about getting divorced?
No, unless he puts out an album of him getting remarried.
What if he remarried the same woman who he wrote an album about how much he hated, and that's why he's getting a divorce?
Is he making a new album of how much he's so happy that he got remarried to the same person?
In my example, yes.
If there is an album produced of said relationship happening and there is outputs of an album or a tour because of the album, then sure, throw in the fact that he got remarried to the same human being and that's what inspired this entire album and this entire tour. Sure, but I don't think it should be like the headlining news of anything.
I think if Marvin Gaye got remarried to the woman that he wrote about how much he hated her, did get remarried to her, I think that would be news. And I think maybe even him getting remarried might be news. As to Lara Jane Grace, I think it's right on the line, but I think it falls. But then again, Lara Jane Grace made it news because Lara Jane Grace posted on Instagram, public Instagram. So now that I think about it, I think it is news. You know, so the question is not, is it news? The question is it news that people care about? And the answer is, I think people actually probably do care if Lara Jane Grace gets married or not, because Lara Jane Grace is at a level of celebrity where people care about things about what Lara does outside of just the music context. For example, let's talk about a bit like Scow. If the singer of Scow, her name is Kat.
Yeah.
If she got married, that wouldn't be news because it doesn't really have anything to do with the band or their album. And they're not famous enough to people care if they get married or not, you know. But is Paul McCartney getting married news?
No.
That's another question, and we're getting kind of heady. But inarguably, it is news to music magazines and the general population because, you know, when he married Heather Mills, everybody covered it, you know. So the question is, that's certainly news. But then you could also ask, well, is that news to punk news? Because every news organization has its own standard as to what is news. TMZ is at the very bottom, you know, anything is news to TMZ, you know, whereas like an academic journal, basically nothing is news, you know. So the question is that news to punk news, you see? So that brings us back to the question is Lara Jane Grace getting married news to punk news? And well, I think
the other thing is social media, right?
Yeah.
I guess we have to talk about social media because some people use their social media accounts almost like a personal social media account. And then some people have subdivided social media accounts. So maybe they might have two accounts. One account that's more public for, you know, all of the rest of us in this world to befriend. And then they have a super private one that's only their inner circle that is, you know, knows about and like, you know, will tag and stuff like that. Right. So like, you know, I guess that is also in play with all of this because Lara Jane Grace may have posted that, you know, she got married and is celebrating it, which I think she should celebrate it because, you know, it is something, it's a personal milestone. But the thing is, to us in punk news, like, is I guess the question for us is it worth a post just announcing that Laura Jean Grace is married? And what do we do with it? You know, I think if we do post it, people would be like, oh, congratulations, good for them. And, you know, like all the stuff.
At Punk News?
Well, I'm being optimistic, yeah. John. Like, it's, yes, we know Punk News can be a vile place sometimes. But, you know, I'm hoping that people can celebrate this.
Yeah.
But then again, yes, like, if we post it, there will also be the evil, evil post that people may put under a guise of an alias that they, you know, have on the site, or multiple aliases on the site, posting really, really vile things. I shall not say what they might post, because I don't think it's a bad thing to get married. So there's also that, right? I was like, there's also the fact that, like, if we don't post it, then there's no bad news. But if we do post it, it comes with the good and the bad. So, guys, these are the moral dilemmas that the three of us deal with when it comes to posting these things on the internet for you guys all to read.
Yeah. And it really sucks that we have to, like, take that into consideration, because it's like there's so many, like, cool things or very important events where it's like, I want to cover this, but if I cover this, is it going to make it harder for the people involved? You know Correct. What I mean? And it's like, that really, really, really sucks.
Well, it weighs on us sometimes, yeah. Because if we ever become, let's say, like, you know, very personal or, like, you know, friendly with said band, then it's like, you know, shit, your site yelled at me or whatever. Not us, but, you know, I've talked to a couple of other, you know, ex news editors or whatever, and, you know, it happens. I was like, sometimes you'll review a band and but they're your friends or whatever, and then you give them a very, like, you know, honest feedback or criticism in a review, and then they get mad at you.
Well, there you have it. Any last things that we should cover on tonight's episode?
I don't know, John. What secret projects do you have in, you know, coming up?
Well, yeah. I have several. You know, I've been thinking, like, do I want to do a show? I mean, there's going to be the January 5 Froggy show, which is going to be freaking awesome. Froggy's last show for a while with At Night and Dissidents and... Who's my other band? Froggy, At Night, Dissidents. Who am I forgetting? Oh, my God. There's one other band playing there. Who's the other band playing? Oh, my God.
We are in such rare form today.
Oh, yes.
No direction whatsoever. It's great. Chaos.
Chaos. Oh, Billy.
I don't feel bad about forgetting this band. Billy, which is just Froggy under a different... It's Froggy's proto form. I don't feel bad about that.
Oh, that's funny. Okay.
I was going to be embarrassed for a second, but it's Froggy twice. You get to see Froggy twice at the same show.
Is it a double set?
Yeah, Froggy.
So the show opens with Billy, which is Froggy before Froggy, then At Night and Dissidents, who both have the members of the sisters Janine and Nicole of Witch Hunt in them, and they're both At Night is kind of a gothy, post-punky, witchy kind of thing. Dissidents is kind of like straight up political punk hardcore, but not straight up. It's kind of more punky and was post-punk sometimes, and then straight up hardcore. And of course, Froggy's last show for at least 6 months, maybe more. It's going to be totally rad. So that's what's coming up. But also, we've got the next Flea Record Freakout on March 2. And, you know, I'm going back and forth as to whether or not I want to keep throwing shows or not. I'm not going to just throw shows just to throw shows. I wanted to throw a New Year's Eve show, but on the other hand, it's good I didn't. Because I had so much going on this past quarter It would have been rad, but like I don't need the I wanted to do it. Like, you can't do everything that you want to do in life, you know. There's not enough time. So anyway, the point being is, though, I've been going back over when I want to keep doing shows. I'd like to, but it's a lot of work, and maybe that energy could be put in better places. That being said, I've got two streams as to what I might do for Summer Soiree. You know, three ideas or leads or streams as to what I might do for Summer Soiree 7. If any one of the three works out, it would be amazing. And so that's what I'm thinking about long term. Otherwise, actually, another thing is, you know, it's so cheap to make CDs right now. I, as if I need to put another thing on my plate, I might start a CD record label or a CD label or whatever you want to call it.
Wait, hold on. John, what is your favorite format between vinyl, CD, and cassette tapes?
If I could only have one and I can't have the others?
Yeah.
CDs. I'm picking CDs. Oh, that being said, I love records. And also, the price of record, like I can print 300 records, I can print 300 nice quality records for $1,500. So, I mean, I don't want to put out records that lose money, but, you know, because of what I do, I might be able to put out some really cool records that'll make money. Not tons of money, but like, you know, make some money. I mean, it's a lot easier to keep doing fun stuff if you make money doing it as opposed to losing money doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And so CDs are cool, man. I can print out 300 CDs for like $300. You know what I mean? I got to sell 30 to break even. You know what I mean? So that's easy. You know, records is a little tougher. You know, if I spend $1,500 on 300 records, then I got to sell, a lot of records, actually. I got to sell
half of them.
About right. And that's just breaking even, you know. Yeah. And then even then, you're not. And you know, the band wants free copies or whatever. Or you sell half of them. You're like, hooray, I broke even. And the band's like, where's our money? And you're like, well, you don't get any because I just broke even. So like, you know, it's very difficult to put out records. That being said, I've got a couple of really cool ideas for putting out CDs. And what I might do, and this is actually the. You asked, Sam. I'm sorry for Jordan on, but you asked. I've got a couple of other projects that really are more important to me that I really should move forward on than I'm going to in the new year. But I might also do a CD label. And what I might do is I've got a specific, we'll say, concentration for those CDs. I'll sell those. I'll bank that money. Then I'll flip those over into records and then sell records to protect myself, you know, hypothetically. But that's what I'm thinking. That's what's going on, Sam. That's what's going on.
It's so interesting being in the mind of a John.
It's a scary place, Sam. It's a scary place.
Just don't go dark on us.
Well, listen. If anything, I'm too open and too around. And if anything, I'm too around. So anyways, listen. Happy holidays, everyone. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. Happy Odin's Day, you know what I mean? Happy
Krampus.
You know, Krampus, you know. So listen, you know, have a good year, everybody. We'll be back next week, like always. And I don't know, Sam or Emerson, you got any closing words, or should we just shut this bad boy on down? Oh, we'll be doing our end of year podcast probably next week or the week after, which is always my favorite episode of the entire year. Did we do an end of year podcast last year? I feel like we didn't.
We did.
We always do.
We did one.
Well, so we'll be doing an end of year podcast next week, the week after, which I'm really looking forward to. And so, yeah, so that's what's happening. I don't know, Em or Sam, any last things you want to wrap this one up with?
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I have never seen it. I know it takes place on Christmas, but that's all I know.
I think it's a very decisive question. So, yeah, you guys, all of you guys, email us and let us know.
Yeah. What's your favorite holiday movie?